What we got to think about is how we make our soldiers more effective, how we maintain that battlefield primacy for our commanders, for our soldiers, and for our units. What we need is innovations turned into programs of record, and we're working really hard to do that inside of the formation, inside of the enterprise.
This is The Convergence, the Army's Mad Scientist podcast. I'm Matt Sanisbert, Deputy Director of Mad Scientist. Mad Scientist is a U.S. Army initiative that continually explores the evolution of warfare, challenges assumptions, and collaborates with academia, industry, and government. You can follow us on social media at Army Mad Sci or subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Today I'm talking with Colonel Scott Shaw, Director of the Maneuver Capabilities Development and Integration Directorate at Fort Moore. I'll talk with Colonel Shaw about the maneuver CDID, how it supports Army innovation, and how you can contribute to its mission. As always, the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Department of Defense, Department of the Army, Army Futures Command, or the Training and Doctrine Command. Let's get started. Colonel Shaw, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Matt. Thanks for inviting me to come back on. Also, thanks for what you do, and thanks for what your team does to inform our Army, our leaders, and our soldiers on what's out there in the near and far future. I just want to, again, say thanks for letting me come back on the program.
Thank you. We appreciate that, and we're excited to have you on again. So you've been on before, as I mentioned, but you're in a different position now than you were the last time. So can you give everybody kind of an update? Tell us what you're doing now and why we're doing this episode here today.
So since our last discussion, I spent a couple of years in the Pacific working as the G3, the operations officer for America's First Corps. I was able to see a lot in the Pacific and where our soldiers and our leaders may be required to operate. And I had a lot of opportunities to think about how our Army and our maneuver force would do the same. As you know, there's a lot of water out there, but people live on the land, and our Army and our maneuver force must be ready to operate in similar locations like we fought in during the Second World War. So last summer, I moved from First Corps back to the beginning, back to Fort Moore, where I currently serve as the Director of the Maneuver Capabilities Development and Integration Directorate, the Maneuver CDID or the MCDID. The sum of all those words in a very long title mean that I lead the organization responsible for delivering the maneuver force of 2030 and designing the maneuver force of 2040. It means I lead an exceptional team of leaders who are here to help current and future units, current and future commanders, current and future soldiers in the future that is tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a very important gig there, and one that I think this podcast will kind of shine a light on to let everybody else out in the Army know what's going on there. So let's dig a little bit into CDIDs, though. For those that don't know, what is a CDID? What's the maneuver CDID, and what are you specifically responsible for there?
Yeah, so a CDID, a Capabilities Development and Integration Directorate, and those are two different things, Capabilities Development and Integration, and I'll detail those here in a minute, is Army Futures Command's lead for an Army Force Modernization proponent, which is kind of like a warfighting function, but not necessarily. We're all assigned to AFC. I wear an AFC patch. I'm further assigned to the Futures and Concepts Center, headquartered at Fort Eustis, with duty at Fort Moore. So each CDID, and there are 10, is located at their respective Army Force Modernization proponent, and they operate under the authority of Commanding General Army Futures Command, the Director of the Futures and Concepts Center, as well as the authority of their respective Force Modernization proponents. So I work for and operate under the authority of General Rainey and Lieutenant General Hodney, and I work for and operate under the authority of Major General Tooley in his capacity as the force modernization proponent for maneuver, as well as the specified proponent for robotics. And those are outlined in Army Regulation 5-22. The maneuver CDID specifically determines and develops future force capabilities and future infantry, armor, and robotic requirements. And requirements mean documents. First, a need, and then a document that we use in order to gain funding for those specific materials and concepts and doctrine, you know, across the .mil PFP spectrum. Those result in a trained and ready maneuver force that will be fully integrated into Army combined and joint operations, in order to maintain the battlefield primacy of our soldiers and the formations in which they fight. And that last few words is really what we do. We maintain the battlefield primacy of our soldiers and the formations in which they fight. And again, just to sum it up, we work to deliver the maneuver force of 2030, which really in the grand scheme of things is right around the corner, and to design the maneuver force of 2040. What do we do on a daily basis? So there's 10 directorates within the maneuver seated. There's a concepts director that does concepts, also does force design updates, threat analysis, and science and technology. All 10 of those directorates inside the maneuver seated are either colonels or GS-15s. We have a maneuver battle lab that is a fantastic, amazing, exceptional place. That's the largest battle lab in our Army. It was the amalgamation of the infantry, the dismounted battle lab and the mounted battle lab. So when the maneuver center came together from the infantry school and the armor school in the early part of the teens, the two battle labs merged and is located on Fort Moore, but does live and constructive experimentation. And on Fort Moore, we have the Army's only experimentation force, Alpha Company, first of the 29th Infantry, that we do live experimentation with both internally and externally. We make sure that our brigades are able to fight in the current and future battlefield. The requirements divisions determine what is needed in order to better fight now or better fight in the near and far future, and write the requirements documents that are necessary in order to ensure that we get what we need to soldiers and commanders in a timely manner. The four requirements divisions we have are maneuver requirements, which do all manned combat vehicles, large and medium cal ammunition, so ammunition for tanks and Brads and personnel carriers, platform-based missiles and mortars. The soldier requirements division, if it touches a soldier's body, and I told you I'm up at the Soldier Center today, we've got a great partnership across the DEVCOM centers and labs. But soldier requirements does soldier systems, soldier protection, small arms, optics, sensors, and lasers, and dismounted mortars and missiles. We have a robotics requirements division that does ground systems, air systems, including UAS at the squad to battalion level. We work with the Aviation Center under their proponency in order to write the requirements that are necessary for our BCTs. We work with the Fire Center on counter UAS, that's inside of robotics requirements, and are working on robotic control in order to ensure that soldiers have what they need in order to control robots. So controllers and software for control. And we're also working on artificial intelligence inside of BCTs. That's a nascent effort. We're figuring out how we're going to use that inside of a BCT. Also, autonomy for robots is one of the things we're working inside robotic requirements. And then Mission Command Requirements Division, our fourth requirements division, has two of the six network requirements inside of it, but specifically working Mounted Mission Command and Dismounted Mission Command inside of BCTs. We do some work with command posts as well. And across all four requirements divisions are working with multiple cross-functional teams in AFC in order to ensure that they can do what they need to do and that we can do what we need to do. Our CDID is also formation-based, and it's been like that for a while. What formation-based means is I have four colonels who are centrally select list selectees who manage the three BCT types and the Security Force Assistance Brigade, so those four brigade formations, to ensure that all of the eaches make the brigade function in the aggregate. So we have enough mechanics for enough vehicles, enough infantry soldiers to do what we need to do in an armor brigade combat team, moving things around inside of the brigade combat team's modified table of organization and equipment, its MTO, in order to ensure that it can do what it is that it needs to do in order to fulfill its wartime mission. At the end of the day, what the maneuver seated does is drive transformation across all three time horizons that you've seen Army senior leaders, including Lieutenant General Hodney at the maneuver conference, put up an Army level slide. It's really transforming contact, 1 foot in today, tomorrow, 1 foot in 2030, and 1 foot in 2040. But that's what the maneuver seated does on a daily basis.
That's great. That's an awesome and comprehensive kind of breakdown of what the maneuver seated does. And I think it gives a good picture of just how important the maneuver seated is. It seems, you know, from what you described, they kind of have a hand in seemingly everything that goes into warfighting, which is super important here. So let's dive into a little bit. You know, you talked about you're looking at the now, you're looking at the near future and the far future. You know, from the TRADOC perspective, we're looking kind of 10 years out, but 2030 is coming quick. So what are some of the initiatives for the BCTs that you're working now that you can tell us about?
So Transformation Contact is the thing we're working right now. We had observers at the JRTC rotation in August, have discussed how Transformation and Contact worked for them, how they're using the organization and the material, or working with the doctrine writers here to ensure that the doctrine comes out in order to fight a Transforming Contact, organized, equipped, and led BCT, you know, across DOTMIL PFP. Also have had observers out in Hawaii. I know that's rough. But observers out in Hawaii with 225, as they are another one of the Transforming Contact brigades, and then 310 Mountain, also the third Transforming Contact brigade, and have discussed with all three formations leaderships, all three formations soldiers, how it is that they're fighting those brigades. So that's the first and most important effort we're doing in the now space. We're also working on light and medium BCTs. So mobility for IBCTs is a thing, both making it lighter in strategic mobility and more tactically mobile in order to ensure that soldiers are able to do what they need to do. As I go to science and tech places, DEVCOM centers, I'm talking with industry at events in conjunction with DEVCOM. You know, we talk about things you can't make lighter. You can't make water lighter. You can't make batteries are very much a consideration. Soldier power is very much a consideration. It's one of the top efforts we're working here. And how you're going to charge and recharge, how you're going to ensure you have the batteries on hand in order to do what it is that you need to do in an austere environment that may be separated from your, you know, base of supply. How are you going to move those things back and forth tactically? How are you going to move those things back and forth strategically is a serious consideration. So thinking about mobility for BCTs strategically and tactically is another one we're working on. Robotics in infantry brigade combat team formations and armor brigade combat team formations is something we're working on. It's an AFC priority effort, an FCC priority effort. Frankly, it's an Army priority effort. You know, General Rainey has said at AUSA, we're never going to trade blood for first contact again. And we're working really hard on that. In the air domain, in the land domain, both, the BCT commander is going to have to think about, as you're seeing in current operations, what they've got in the air in order to speed up their decision cycle, in order to speed up their OODA loop, in order to see what it is they need to see and strike what it is they need to strike at distance, in order to never trade blood for first contact. And then the last one that you've seen, a lot of y'all have seen in the press or in, you know, Army discussions, is simplifying command and control for BCTs, simplifying how a brigade commander, how battalion commanders, how company commanders, how platoon leaders, how squad leaders are controlling their formations, how they're commanding their formations across the entirety of that system. So unencumbering BCTs from large dishes, large command posts, unencumbering battalions from the same. You know, as you've all seen it, if you can see it, you can strike it. If you can find it, you can strike it. And what we want is formations that are able to be survivable on the battlefield in order to have a survivable command and control apparatus. We've got to get lighter, smaller, more mobile, and ensure that commanders can do the job that they need to do, which is provide direction, provide intent for their formations. So those are the top four that we're working on in the now. There are some smaller ones. You know, we're always trying to make things lighter. We're always trying to make things more lethal. We're always trying to make soldiers more survivable. And sometimes those things are in conflict with each other. Armor is heavy. And there are ways to get around the weight of things that DEVCOM and others are working on. But what we got to think about is how do we make our soldiers more effective? How do we maintain that battlefield primacy for our commanders, for our soldiers, and for our units in order to make sure that, they're able to fight and win on the modern battlefield? That's the underlying of the what we're doing in the right now.
That's great to hear. And a lot of what you said kind of jives with what we recently put out in our operational environment document, the Operational Environment 2024, 2034 Large-Scale Combat Operations. One of the things there is, and this is based off of a lot of insights we pulled from contemporary conflicts, is, like you said, if you can be seen on the battlefield, you can be hit. So we have to be lighter. We have to be able to be more mobile and more survivable. We have to be moving around more quickly, able to set up and break down. So that's great to hear that you have some initiatives working towards that. You mentioned earlier that, you know, the Army's kind of shifted a little bit of focus to Indo-PACOM, and rightly so. But, you know, there's a lot of water out there, but people fight on land. So looking ahead to the future for the Maneuver Center, what are some of the initiatives you're looking at for the next 10 years based on where we think we might be globally in terms of conflict?
Yeah, so one is protection of our formations. We don't issue kit, we equip formations. And thinking about formation-based layered protection, how it is that we're going to protect a formation vice just protecting a vehicle is important. You know, wingmen protecting each other, platoons protecting each other from various threats. Inside of the modernization community of practice, we have a lot of acronyms that are different from the rest of the Army. And I was new to AFC, new to the modernization community when I came in last year. You know, SWAP is one, size, weight, and power. So, you know, the weight of a vehicle is a thing. You're seeing Ukraine with mud, the power on vehicles is a thing. And considering how you make a vehicle lighter in order to not get mired in mud, in order to go over bridges, is very much a consideration. How much power a vehicle can generate. We already talked about soldier power. That's tremendously difficult. Vehicle power, also tremendously difficult. We want the best for our soldiers, we want the best for our combat formations, we want the best for our commanders. But again, sometimes that's in conflict. And if we can have a formation-based, a collaborative protection effort concept, which is something we're working on across several formations inside of FCC and AFC. There are multiple of us that are working together. I mean, it's a group effort on behalf of AFC to do formation-based layered protection. We're working on it now, but, you know, it's going to mature in down the road a bit as we get the concept going, as the technology matures, as the doctrine is there, as we have organizations organized to do so. I know we always go back to .mil PFP, but that's how we do it. We're working on the squad as a system, vice just soldier load. So soldier load is one aspect of enabling soldiers and commanders to do what they need to do. And if you treat the soldier not as part of a system, then you're not getting more with less, or you're not getting more with what you have. It's just a means to an end, and a concept that we've worked across. And it's several folks. The Soldier Lethality CFT is working it. We're working it with the Soldier Lethality CFT on behalf of Army Futures Command. But, you know, if you think about a Bradley or an Abrams, something goes on, we're always taking into account the size, weight, and power. How much weight a squad can carry, and this is, you know, this is not a new effort. This is something that's been studied and studied and studied and studied and studied. You know, something goes into a squad, something's got to come out of a squad, because you can only carry so much weight across that squad right now. As robotics mature, that is another dynamic that will help the squad carry more weight or resupply faster. But treating the squad as a system will enable us to distribute load across those 9 soldiers in a rifle squad in order to make sure that the squad can do what it needs to do. We're also working, in the 10 years, there are several signature modernization efforts that are gonna come to fruition. You know, the M10 Booker is in fact, it's in its gunnery density right now, doing their initial gunnery. You're going to see the armored multipurpose vehicle, the AMP-V, being fielded more right now. There's one brigade fielded. A second brigade is coming online here, being fielded here in the real near future before the first of the year. So improvements to existing platforms, including like we talked about the protection system, but different families of ammunition that will do different things than they can do right now. So extended line of sight is something we're working on for Abrams. And new missiles for our mounted formation to ensure that we can keep range on our adversary, so that we can push our range out to where it needs to be. Those are the real big ones in the next 10 years that we're working on. In addition to those, and I would be derelict if I didn't talk about the night vision, the situational awareness strategy is it's not a night vision strategy. It's a situational awareness strategy. Part of that strategy is new night vision for the close combat force and also for the close combat support force. So an improved binocular, a binocular two-eye goggle for the close combat support force. So that force of mechanics and cooks and very important to the force people can see at night. Right now, PVS-14 is a monocular goggle that we've had around. I was first issued a PVS-14 in 1998 when I was a first lieutenant. I wore PVS-14 to Afghanistan in 2003. I wore it to Iraq in 2004 and 2005 when I was a company commander. I wore it as a battalion commander in 2014 and 16. So that goggle it's a good goggle. However, it has reached the end of its life, and it's time to replace it. And we've got an effort to do that here in the shorter than 10 years timeframe.
That's great to hear because, I mean, like I said, the next 10 years, 10 years isn't a very long time in the grand scheme of things, especially with how quickly technology advances. So it's great to hear that there's a lot of initiatives looking in that time frame. That's kind of the time frame we look at in TRADOC when we're looking at the OE. But AFC, they look into the deeper future. They're looking from now until 2040, 2050. So what's the MCD doing now to look out beyond those next 10 years?
Yeah, I'll go back to General Rainey's guidance. Never again trading blood for first contact. And I will fully acknowledge that's a tall order, but task and mission accepted. And it's something we're striving very hard to do. A lot of us here at the Maneuver Center, a lot of us in the Army have got skin in the game. My son's a cadet at the Coast Guard Academy and will graduate next summer. There are a lot of folks who have sons and daughters, brothers and sisters who are, in that 2040 force. And just to be clear for our listeners, there's not a now force, a 2030 force and a 2040 force. It's one force that modernizes over time. So it's not like it's going to be, snap the chalk line and poof. I mean, things are going to come online, doctrine, organization, training, material, leader development, et cetera, across the .mil PFP spectrum. But specifically in the next 10 years, robotics, getting robots more and more into the formation, not in small packets, not a specialty platoon of robots, not robotic and autonomous systems platoons, but robotic enabled maneuver is how we're going to manifest robotics across the force. We're not just looking to have robotic and autonomous systems as part of the formation. Rather, they're going to be doing the dull, the dirty, and the dangerous tasks. And I know a lot of folks say that. And it's interesting. I was in the UK last week, and heard several armies coming to the same conclusion we've come to, and literally use those same words: dull, dirty, dangerous. So humans can do what humans do best, which is make ethics-based decisions. What we want is not to trade blood for first contact. We want to have a forward line of sensors, a forward line of robots, and then a forward line of troops. And pushing those sensors very far out so that robots can do what robots need to do. Robots do really well at sitting, watching, following instructions. And so humans can be where humans need to be so they can see the full battlefield and make ethics-based decisions. That's what it looks like in 10 years. But, to go back to what you said, and I think we both have said it in this podcast, humans live on land. And in 10 years, the land domain is still where we will be fighting. So we've got to think about, and we're working on, better concepts, improved requirements and integrating those into the formations in 2040 in order to ensure the, again, to go back to the mission statement, ensuring the battlefield primacy of our soldiers and the formations in which they fight.
I like the part about the roboticization. We had a guest on previously who was in Ukraine, and he talked about just how much more easily they could see things with all the UAS in the air, just as eyes in the sky. I mean, just that simple of a thing where everybody was connected together. They could all see what everybody else was seeing, and it just made their job so much easier with just a few sensors out there like that, a few, you know, remote controlled unmanned aerial systems. So I think having robots out there as sort of our second line after the sensors, it's just going to make every soldier's job a little bit more easy to do, and keep them out of harm's way until absolutely necessary. So I think that's a really important point. So we've got this platform here. We've got the convergence. We've got a lot of listeners out there who are outside the military, but we've got a lot who are in uniform listening to this show. So what would you say to them? Where do you need help from the force? How can we use this platform to help support what you're doing in the MCDID?
So first, for the soldiers and leaders and commanders that are listening to this, don't get overly frustrated. There are a lot of people working really hard to ensure, again, I'll go back to that same mission statement, to ensure that we're maintaining the battlefield primacy of our soldiers, your soldiers, and the formations in which they and you fight. There is a really powerful, interested, hardworking, and I've met a lot of them, and I am amazed by the people that I have talked to, that I've been around. It makes me smile. It makes me tremendously happy. It lets me sleep at night that these folks are doing what they're doing. My folks, my team, the team that I'm proud to be part of, the team of teams that I'm proud to be part of at the Maneuver Center, inside of the Futures and Concepts Center, inside of Army Futures Command, our partners at DEVCOM, the PEOs that we're partnered with. I could keep listing. Academia is another one. I mean, I could keep listing and listing. There's a huge enterprise of people, you know, from the back to the pointy end of the spear that are just trying to help. And they're trying to help really, really hard. So please don't get overly frustrated about what it is that your problem is. A way to alleviate some of that frustration is be part of the process. And I'm not being accusatory. I'm saying that we are always, always open to suggestions from the force or from the field. Our directors go out and talk to commanders and soldiers, whether that's the Army capabilities managers, the four formation managers, the requirements directors, the battle lab hosts experiments here. And I brief at the pre-command course and talk to battalion commanders and brigade commanders at the maneuver pre-command course about those experiments. They're great training opportunities. You can also come here and re-blue yourself. And those are taskings that come out from our Army through the Army Synchronization Resourcing Conference, through the ASARC. But it's a great training opportunity that you can do. And you can also come here and talk to us about what it is that we're doing. I do the same. I talk to a lot of commanders. I talk to a lot of leaders. I talk to pre-command courses. I talk to the Maneuver Captain's Career Course. And we listen. And we want you to be part of the process. So please don't be shy. If you've got something that you're frustrated with, scott.a.shaw12.mil@army.mil. That's my email address. My personal phone number is on the bottom of my signature block. My gov phone is too. There are only 1,440 minutes in a day, but we want to listen to you. And I'll direct you to the right person that's working that problem. It may not happen while you're in that position, but please understand that there are folks that are ready to listen and they're ready for you to be part of the process. We have had hundreds of discussions with the leaders in 2101, 225, 310, the divisions that are on top of those three brigades, their sister brigades, the collection teams that were collecting on those formations rotations. I personally talked to two of the three brigade commanders, the TIC brigade commanders, but that's not, I mean, I've got an Army capability manager for the IBCT who has talked to them a lot. And his deputy has it. So we're working hard to enable folks to be part of the process. And the third thing I would say is be part of the process. I know I just said that, and I'm saying it again, but I'm saying it in a different lens. Many divisions and installations have innovation efforts. We have one here at Fort Moore. We've got a DevCom Catalyst Pathfinder Lab, and we talk to those innovation officers and those teams in divisions and cores on a regular basis. Once a quarter, I personally host the Maneuver Innovation Forum on MS Teams. And our innovation team from the battle lab and the headquarters tee up topics that the force has requested or that we think are important. The last time we did counter small UAS and things that are new, we will help units with, we'll help installations with, we'll help anybody with inside the Maneuver Innovation Forum. It's a real flat community. So there's lieutenants and captains that are bringing stuff in. It is moderated and it's only about 90 minutes, but we take, you know, questions for the record and we parse them out to different divisions. But we want you to be part of the process. And that is that is one of the forums for folks to get involved in, if interested. I personally send an invite to the division chiefs of staff about 2 weeks prior to all of the active duty division chiefs of staff. I sent one to the National Guard Bureau as well so that they know about it. Our National Guard liaison does the same thing. But if you want to attend and you don't get an invite, again, please send me an email, scott.a.shaw12, and I'll ensure that you get an invite and your voice is heard. That forum is the Maneuver Centers, is the Maneuver CDIDS Innovation Forum. We run it on behalf of the Maneuver Center. I run it on behalf of them. I host it. I don't run it. I host it. But I'm in every single one of them. And our team, like I said, tees up topics and in some cases briefs those topics. But that innovation forum is one of the sub innovation forums to the Army Innovation Forum that the Army Futures and Concepts Center runs. And if you're interested in that one, I would ask you to either send me an email and we can direct you to the Army Innovation Forum director. Or talk to your division innovation officer. I know that, many divisions and corps have got them. Some are more established than others, and we're working to help some of those folks. But the goal of these innovation forums, what we need is innovations turning into programs of record. And we're working really hard to do that inside of the formation, inside of the enterprise, so that soldiers are able to get the innovations that are coming out of divisions. And we spread those across all of the BCTs, or all of the BCTs by type. But those are three places that the platform can help support us, that the Convergence podcast can help support us, and that frankly, the force and the field can help us do what we need to do. Just send us cards and letters, and don't be concerned about overwhelming our inboxes. We'll parse them out. And if you don't hear back in a timely fashion, again, shoot me an email. I'll make sure that our team gets energized. Or there may just not be an answer just yet, but I'll make sure that you do get an answer in the affirmative or negative.
Well, there you go, Mad Scientist community. That's about as open an invitation as it gets there. So as you heard, they're looking for ideas. They're open to them. Please do reach out. As somebody who worked for at first RDECOM and then Army Futures Command when it was stood up for the first 15 years of my career, I know how important the Maneuver CDID is. You know, I've seen the interactions between the CDID and our DevCom Armament Center lab when I worked there. I know we have individuals who are on site at Fort Moore working for the Armament Center to make sure everybody's talking, make sure everybody's communicating back and forth, making sure we have the best for our soldiers. So it's a super important place there. Please do reach out and please do try to support them. As we wind this conversation down, Colonel Shaw, I wanted to say thank you again for coming back and bringing this topic up. Hopefully we can get this out to as many folks as we can. Hopefully your inbox is flooded. That's kind of the challenge I'll put out to our Mad Scientist community. Flood the inbox there with suggestions and ideas. So I want to thank you again for coming on and talking to us and for highlighting the MC did here. Super thankful that you're one of our Mad Scientist contacts and that you're constantly in contact with us. And thanks for coming on and having this conversation with me today.
You bet, Matt. And also the word is robotization. Robotization.
Okay. I'm not going to be able to say it, but I'll let you say it there. All right. Thanks, Colonel Shaw.
Thanks for listening to The Convergence. I'd like to thank our guest, Colonel Scott Shaw. You can follow us on social media at Army Mad Sci, and don't forget to subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Finally, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you accessed it. This feedback helps us improve future episodes of The Convergence and allows us to reach a bigger and broader audience.